the people who are paying the money, the producers and the rights holders, to put pressure on the script writers to do it how they want, as opposed to letting the script writers run with their own original ideas, right? And yeah, it seems like almost every time you hear about that, it makes a worse movie than if they were just to let the people writing the movie go and come up with their own ideas and let them come to fruition.
So I'll just go straight to the point that the Avengers Doomsday movies that is set to come out on Christmas of this year, if this continue to follow the tradition of just falling at the box office like previous like movies that came out just right before it, MCU maybe just as well as being Doom. You know, like,
yeah, doomed.
Just like the name suggests.
Mm-hmm.
They have from the so far from reveals and sneak peeks released on Marvel Studios social media, we get to know that they are trying to bringing back the old fans. They clutching on nostalgia now by paying big money for actors like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans to come back as Iron Man. No, wait. To come back as Doctor Doom. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, and different guy, different Iron Mask.
And
right?
I'm not sure. They say Steve Rogers coming back, but I think it's not going to be Captain America. If for fans who have read the comics or play some, I would say, Lego Marvel video games, they may know that Steve Rogers may become Captain Hydra in Avengers Doomsday. So like a twist corrupted Captain America who joined Hydra.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it's clear to see that fans are being more curious about this Tony Stark variant than the actual comic histories of Victor Von Doom, which is another false direction that I noticed the MCU is heading toward. Since they having too much of a backlash, they're kind of going far away from how they can just nail another masterpiece, I would call Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame. Those movies took 10 years to build up the anticipation for them. Victor Von Doom so far haven't received enough of a build of enough of exposition. Introduction to the character, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically just showing up for this movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think, it's interesting. We'll see how it works, because they're obviously banking on, you know, Robert Downey Jr. being a pull, right, and a draw, and hopefully that they're hoping that can make up for it. But it will be interesting to see story wise how that feels and if it feels rushed.
Yeah, I know a bit about Dr. Doom in the comic. As funny that as his name may suggest, he's actually a very he has a lot of feats and achievement against heroes.
Mm-hmm.
He's very smart, very strong. He mastered both the magic on the same level of Doctor Strange and the technology advancement of the Tony Stark Iron Man. He's a combination of two superpowers,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even more powerful than that he pursue power itself, and he isn't holding back by compass,
yeah.
Like the heroes would. There was a Fantastic Four movie made by Century Fox for the MCU already, and because they didn't portray the villain like accurate enough, the movie just a total fail to actually introduce global audience to the Fantastic Four. Oh yeah, like I have Doctor Doom is the main villain of Fantastic Four, one of the most iconic superhero teams from Marvel.
Yeah, and one that they've really struggled to do successfully. Like the most recent Fantastic Four movie was, you know, the most successful of any.
The first step,
they've made, but there are like five or six failed versions before that, right?
There were three movies, let's see. Then they reboot. They may have a reboot movie, which totally failed because everything happened in the movie didn't make sense at all. Very stupid script and story. In the latest one, Dr. Doom only show up in the cameo at the end of the movie. We didn't get to know what is his time, anything at all. And the Avengers Doomsday movie coming up may be the one that will introduce his backstory. There's many theories about that too. I don't think we have enough time to talk about it. But moving on from the sneak peek so far, you also get to know that Marvel is going to bring back the X-Men with a mandate, like a fundamental role in the movie structure. There was a sneak peek came out probably 2 days ago, showing that Avengers Doomsday will also continue what happened after the X-Men movies created by Century Fox, with a more accurate to an approach that is more accurate to the comics.
Oh, and that's something that fans have been wanting for a long time, right? Is for these two worlds to come together.
Yes, so they bringing three of Marvel's most iconic teams together. The Avengers teaming up with Fantastic Four and the X-Men for the enormous threat of Doctor Doom. So maybe Doctor Doom's also getting a huge critical role in this one too. Let's see. For the X-Men, I actually have a lot of anticipation for it. I expect that X-Men may be the missing factors that can save the MCU at this point. Not Deadpool, but X-Men. Let's see, X-Men is most well known for his conflicts, mainly resolving around discrimination. That's something some people may be surprised to know about. They don't fight to save the world, or they do, but mostly they having to fight against the people who same humans they may try to protect, because their powers are already exist ever since they were born. It's caused by mutation in their gene, as people call them mutants.
Right, as opposed to, you know, say Spider-Man having the radioactive spider turning him into a superhero, or the Fantastic Four getting cosmic radiation or what have you.
Yeah. It's also one of the weirdest things in MCU why they people have to discriminate X-Men from Spider-Man. Like some people actually think Spider-Man is a menace, but people don't look down on Spider-Man as hard as the X-Men.
Yeah.
And the X-Men try much harder on the political front line to show people that they have these powers and they use their powers for the good, for the greater good of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
Also they show struggles on how Cyclops is a character who shoot laser out of his eyes, but he does that all the time without being able to control it willfully. He have to wear special glasses
mm-hmm.
all the time. There's also Angel, who's a character who can fly, but he cannot wear proper shirts that can tuck in his wings. And Rogue is a character who can suck away people's life force that can help her to gain other character superpowers,
mm-hmm.
also skill and memories, and even personalities, which kind of sucks that she keeps feeling overloaded by when that happens. So she keep minimal contact in like skin touch with her fellow humans.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like X-Men does maybe more than any other superhero franchise or team, the stories they tell deal a lot more with the sort of negatives of their superpowers, right?
Yeah,
or the drawbacks is, and
yeah, the points that having superpowers sucks.
Yeah.
It's not like other characters like Spider-Man or Iron Man or Captain America being held as like icons of powers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In some late Marvel movies, kind of showing how having superpowers is something awesome, and to the point that we introduced to a lot of characters who basically got,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they have power to manipulate reality and stuff, and all the things with the multiverse feel like kind of out of, like out of our concern in a way.
Yeah, it's not relatable yeah. in the same way.
No, it's like when a character die or a planet being destroyed, there's a multiverse of infinite
yeah.
personality.
Yeah. So what? They'll just go to yeah. another one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing of cosmic nihilism
mm-hmm.
that kind of make us lose ground on what is important. And X-Men may be the necessary factor to bring people back.
Yeah. It makes me think about the old Superman movies from the 80s where at the end of one of them he just, you know, just flies around the planet so fast that he goes back in time and just undoes everything. And it's like, okay, so nothing matters. He can just go back in time and fix it, right? So it's interesting to bring the stakes back to a more human level.
Right. Yeah. That's just the general complain that I'm having today.
Mm-hmm. But overall, you're excited for Avengers Doomsday? Trepidatious.
I'm hoping to see MCU's coming back to his prime, maybe rise from all the criticism and also stop creating lame content on characters who nobody cares. Iron Heart
mm-hmm.
and Ironers. It's just really horrible, terrible show. But yeah, I guess we're gonna wrap up now.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks Min, and we'll keep checking in on this as we learn more and get more trailers and figure out what's gonna happen.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks again to Min for joining me to chat about pop culture stuff. And I am joined in studio once again now by Zarina. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Did I ask how you are?
I don't think you did.
Well, how are you?
I'm very good, too.
Good, yeah, good.
It's a nice sunny day today, which is very, very, surprising for Vancouver, so.
Mm-hmm. I saw somewhere that, not today, but, yesterday was potentially the warmest January 14th in history in Vancouver.
Okay, I'll believe it. I was I went on a little adventure for a friend's birthday. There's a it's like a tree house, I think, near New Brighton Park. And
yes,
it's a very cool spot.
Further east along the Trans-Canada Trail.
Yes, yeah. You know it. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we went there at night, and it was so warm. Like, I barely had to even wear my jacket, and it was such a crisp and beautiful, it felt like it's a summer night, you know, and it was a very surprising twist of events, especially with how cold it was last week.
So. Yeah, one of those nice perks of the West Coast is that we do get those days. I grew up in Alberta in the Rocky Mountains, and we'd occasionally get Chinooks where warm winds would blow through, and you'd get like a winter day that was, quote, warm, which meant that it was like 2 degrees or whatever. But
So fun, though, honestly. Those are the breaths of fresh air, you know?
Yeah. You wanted to talk about something a little more serious than the weather and the spring, and that is what's going on in Iran right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that just like last week, where we just covered the current news that's going on, and I think this week is the news on the most recent protests that are happening in Iran and the blackout, the internet-wide shutdown, which is still going on, and
making it difficult to know exactly what's going on.
Exactly,
right? Which is the idea.
Right? Yeah, like the government is creating a system in which there's no understanding of what the truth is, and trying to undermine a lot of the voices of authority or just citizens that are trying to recount the death count and what's going on the ground, and people are more or less fighting in terms of what is the true narrative, what is going on, and how can we see through when it's a blackout. You know, it's a situation that has happened to a lot of countries that are dealing with conflicts like this, where the mass communication systems are in control of a lot of the ways that you hear about what's going on outside of the country, but also within the country as well. I think a lot of people are uncertain of whether or not they in Iran should stay protesting on the streets, if they should go inside and go home. There's a lot of conflicting information for even the citizens that are trying to advocate for their own rights, and it's hard when the whole ecosystem is blacked out.
Yeah, it really illustrates both like what a powerful tool the internet and the sort of the instant global communication network that has been built up, what a powerful tool that can be, but also how much of a bottleneck that ends up being when a state is able to just sort of turn the tap off. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it has been happening in a lot of states that have these civil disputes, and the ability for the communication systems and political systems to be so intertwined and to be controlled by the same forces, it shows that we really need to have some more objectivity and some more disconnection between state apparatus and civil rights and civil opportunities for discourse. I think we need to find some new avenues for this as well, because there is so much, there's so much seen on mainstream media as well that are coming from very polarized and conflicting spaces. And so when there's, when you look at every angle of where you could be getting communicated about this issue, and all of these spaces are inherently conflicting, it's hard to feel as though there is a truth or there is a certain through line that can go past. And that's why I wanted to talk today about it, because I feel like a lot of people believe that there's only one truth, if that makes sense. But I think a lot of things can be true at the same time. So Iran right now has been dealing with the Islamic Republic for a very long time, and Iranian citizens are having their human rights violated constantly every day. And this is not an issue of religion. Any regime in which is, placing totalitarian or authoritarian practices in the name of religion are inherently against that, the ethics and morality that comes with being a religious person. I think that all religions are equal in the ways that they believe that everyone deserves dignity and respect and care, and everyone should be granted their human rights. And I think when these acts of terror are committed in the name of any religion, this occurs for every conflict that we can see in our global, like, geopolitical sphere right now. When you attach, or when the oppressor attaches their religion to it, a lot of the times it can create these, like, environments of discontent towards religious backgrounds, and it creates, yeah, Islamophobia, or, you know, in very many cases, like, anti-Semitic behavior as well. And I think that they are all connected. As we see conflicts around the globe happening, we can understand that it's all coming from the same kinds of polarized beliefs, the ways that we don't see through the kind of, yeah, the mirage that is being presented by the state and by these authoritarian figures. We have to, yeah, we have to hold on to our dignity, and we have to hold on to what values we have of what we desire in a society, rather than the labels that are kind of placed down upon us.
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember and to see that, you know, it's not, you know, on the surface, as you're talking about, it can be sort of portrayed as like a religious, or as, you know, driven by religion or dictated by religion. But at the end of the day, it's about sort of power and maintaining power, and mm-hmm. The groups or the people with power doing everything they can and using every tool at their disposal, including religion, to keep those without power out of power and to maintain their own hold on power. And I think that, you know, this is even further complicated, this particular situation, like many situations of this nature around the globe, by just sort of the international geopolitics of it, and the fact that you know there are American interests and other interests that, you know, are happier having the people who are in power, but also would love an excuse to go in and install their own new person that they can control, or administration that they can control. And so it just adds all these layers onto it where, you know, it's very easy as a person living in the West, in the global North, to be like, well, yes, like this religious dictatorship should no longer be in charge in this country halfway across the world. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, oh, yes, and, you know, Americans should go do something about that, right?
Exactly, yeah. That's what I was talking about, the two truths that can happen at the same time. I feel like people that are viewing this situation as another victory on behalf of the kind of U.S. imperial conquest right now. I mean, there is a lot of geopolitics, like you said, that is heavily involved in just the region as well. And I think that when we're considering what steps to do as, like, as a global community, like how we should be framing this issue, how we should be talking about it, it definitely needs to have the nuances of these systems, because it's not it's not just happening today. It's a historical pattern. I mean, there's a lot of books that we can point to that have talked about how the U.S. has been involved in these regime changes. As somebody who grew up in Indonesia, like, I grew up in Bali, and in Indonesia, like, if you read the Jakarta Method, there is a very clear pattern of the U.S. that, took away a very democratically elected leader and kind of propped up its own puppet. And so these patterns are seen, and they are located by historians and by scholars and by academics. And I think that there's so many Iranian voices that have really cultivated that knowledge of the history, and these are the voices we should be listening to, rather than political pundits or people that have only entered the conflict in this period of time, in these contexts right now. So I really hope to see a lot of change and a beautiful, like, revolution that comes out of this and can empower Iranian voices who have spent so long trying to figure out how their country should be created and run. And and these are the people that should be in charge of these situations, and these are the people that deserve the right to decide and dictate their own future for their community and for their citizens. And I think that we, as a global population, should be championing these voices rather than trying to place, you know, policies that we believe, or the Western world believes, will lead to a democracy, because clearly it hasn't been working.
Yeah, I think the great hope is that Iranians can do this on their own as much as possible, can make the decisions and can work through the process without other imperial powers getting involved to maintain their own interests instead of putting the interests of the Iranian people first.
Exactly, because it's been over 50 years of the Islamic Republic, and there's a lot of beautiful works and pieces and, you know, prosperity, I think, that is in the imaginations of Iranian people and the way that they want to live their life. And I think that, you know, I really am praying for all the families there and during the blackout that cannot contact their family, all the Iranians in diaspora right now. And yeah, my heart goes out to you, and yeah, keep fighting.
Well, thank you for joining me today. A quick conversation, and maybe we can return to this or another topic in the future. But yeah, again, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right, we're going to wrap up with just a song to carry us into Democracy Now!, where they will be continuing conversations on this topic and other topics related to U.S. imperialism. This is Pretty by Worrywart. We're playing the Unreal City Festival this weekend. I'll see you next week.
There's a thrill in my skin, but she wore out two speaks, really just revolving background from the corner to the side.